dimensions, but I'm going to concentrate on the radian part in the scalar sector. So what I call scalar sector would be the Higgs particle and the radian. So this is work that I've been doing, what I did in the fall, and another paper at Christmas with two students in Maryland. It's kind of we're looking at the radian, the kind of more newer work experiments model. So I'll try to first quickly introduce the model, then talk about the radian in RS1. RS1 I call just Randall syndrome 1, which is the original proposal where matter lives on the brain, and just review what the formality was in that case. Then radian, when matter fields are not allowed to leak into the bulk. So if there's something, I mean, is it just the same thing as before, or something changed? We have some Higgs radio mixing, because the radian and the Higgs could just mix, they have some quantum numbers, so what happens in that case? And then I will talk about the radian and flavor changing is occurrence mediated by the radian when matter is in the bulk. And then I conclude. Okay, so you know, we have one warp extra dimension, we just have one extra dimension with the it's compact and with the warp geometry. So in the original setup, you put all the standard model fields on the so-called 3D brain on one side. And phenomenologically, what you have in this case is you have gravity living in all the five dimensions. And what you expect is perhaps try to see KK gravitons. And also perhaps this radian bright scalar, which is part of the 5D graviton perturbation. So that's what I would call RS1. Where all matter standard model is put on the TV brain. Okay, so this is kind of the picture. Higgs and standard model are put here. The graviton ends up being localized in the prime brain, so we feel very goodly contractions. And KK gravitons will actually be exponentially localized in the TV brain, and the radian is also model just enabled. Okay, so in the recent setups now, people put the field, the standard model fields in the bulk, except the Higgs, because you realize that you really, to try to address the hierarchy problem, you really need only the Higgs on the TV brain. And if you put gauge fields and fermions in the bulk, and the fermions actually are localizing in the Planck brain, it turns out that you can actually suppress four fermion operators, because now they're living close to the Planck brain, and so you don't have dangerous four fermion operator, which you don't know what the size. The problem with this is that now you have KK fields for all the matter fields, and then these KK fields would actually induce immediate problems such as precision electroweak test or flavor processes, which we put bounds on the scale of the KK gravitons, okay, on the KK fields. So now you have KK gravitons living in the bulk, you have KK powers of standard model particles living in the bulk, and you still have the radian gravity scalar. Okay. This is kind of the picture. So I'm interested in kind of comparing what happens to the radian phenomenology comparing these two scenarios. Okay, so now you have fermions, light fermions living near the Planck brain, KK gluons, living here, I mean, KK fields are actually localized in the TV brain, massless gauge fields are flat, and the Higgs, for now, we just consider it's on the TV brain. An interesting and acute idea of this model is that you can also try to address the hierarchy problem, the hierarchy of the masses of fermion masses, because if the Higgs is here and you put light fermions on the Planck brain, the wave function at the TV brain is actually exponentially suppressed. So you can try to explain why you observe the hierarchical masses and mixings that observe CK matrix and why the quarks have such hierarchies. So that's kind of this warp extra dimension model that tries to address both hierarchy, I mean, just the hierarchy problem, TV to Planck, is addressed in the same way, but you can also try to impose that you want to generate fermion masses and mixings with this hierarchical wave functions. Okay, so the radian, what happens with the radian in this case? Is it the same phenomenology as in RS1, or does something change? So now the radian couplings are Higgs-like. It will remain Higgs-like mostly in this fits in the bulk case. So the constraints on models, once you put these fields in the bulk, the constraints on these models is that these KK fields should be, you know, at best 3 dB, but maybe 3, 4, 5, 6 dB. If you want to be okay with precision electrowave test and flavor processes. So it may be that the only observed particles that you would see at the LHC would be the Higgs and perhaps the radium. So that's why maybe it's interesting to look at the radium, what happens, because you may have a hard time just trying to see a 3 TeV KK gluon at the LHC. And then the radium can mix with the Higgs. Okay, so this is all work, so these are 10 years ago, and then there was a lot of work working on the radium LHC phenomenology, mostly here. And then, okay, we just, everything was kind of blue. Maybe I missed a figure or two, I don't know. But about 2003, you know, people started, okay, we've done everything on the radium. Now, just last year or 3 years ago, this paper came and they calculated the couplings of the radium when standard model fields are in the bulk, and they kind of saw that as they were expecting, nothing really happened. But so what I'm concentrating on seeing that actually you can actually find differences on the radium phenomenology if fields are in the bulk.
So when the standard model is in the bulk, obviously there's a risk of violation of conservation of charge, the electric charge from weakening the bulk. And that must be quite strong constraints on something, surely.
Well, I don't think it's the strongest bound.
The bounds are not strong?
Mm-hmm. We're in the bulk too, right? I mean, in that picture.
Oh, sorry, maybe I misunderstood. What's the dimension of the brain, sorry? What's the dimension of the brain that the Higgs field is on?
So, this is one extra dimension. And
it's like a Klutz plan picture where we're in the zero modes of bulk fields. So we're actually living in the bulk too.
Yes.
So, it's not like a brain picture where you actually lose things in the bulk and then they're gone and we don't see them. But we're actually in the bulk interacting with things in the bulk.
Okay, and what's the dimension of the brain?
Which brain? So
the brain that the Higgs field is on.
It's 40. It's 40.
It's 3 plus 1.
It's 3 plus 1, yes.
Okay.
But so, yeah, so you only put a Higgs on the brain. The rest is leaking in the bulk.
So we live in some 5-dimensional world and we're just independent of the 400.
Or a specific profile, but because in this case, the zero modes aren't constant.
Yes. So it's Fermi localization in the extra dimension, if you want. So the standard model fields are the lightest KK modes of the fermions. Well, they're really the zero modes, and you add some fixed coupling so that you generate a little bit of mass, but with the zero modes of the Kaluza-Klein tower. And so the constraints are just four Fermi operator flavor for the problems, or just electroweak precision data, key parameter, raw parameter. These are the strongest constraints, and they put these constraints so the scale of the KK fields should be of the order of 3 TeV, and that's the best thing you can do.
So we live in the 5-dimensional bulk.
Yes.
And the delta function, you can have couplings on the brain, is that?
Yeah, you can. Yes, you can put. You can also put a Higgs exponentially. I mean, you can leak the Higgs a little bit on the bulk, and not having a delta function Yukawa's, but it works the same way.
Can you put the bulk Yukawa coupling to?
For the Higgs. You can put a bulk Higgs. Yes, you can put a bulk Higgs. But the Higgs should be localized. I mean, you can put the Higgs exactly localized, or you can nick it out a little bit. As long as it's localized in the TV plane, works in the same way. Okay, so the radion, so how do you introduce the couplings of the radion? So the radion is, you can understand it as part of the 5D graviton. So you have your 5D metric, background metric, and then you perturb around it. So you find 5D gravitons, but it turns out that what you can do is you can go into a proper reference frame, and in that reference frame, you gauge away modes that are non-physical, and the physical modes that survive are this kind of tensor graviton, which includes the massless graviton and the whole cover of graviton. Then you have a degree of freedom, a scalar degree of freedom, which only depends on the 4D coordinate. So it's not a 5D field, it's a 4D field, and it's that array. So it's part of the 5D gravitational perturbation. And it's massless. So if you want to give it a mass, well, okay, you can have some bulk field, some bulk scalar field, and maybe do a Doppler Weiss mechanism and give it and stabilize the system, which in turn will give you really mass. But you can understand how it comes from that. So how does it couple with matter? So because you can understand it as a graviton, the graviton couples to matter through the energy momentum tensor. So well, you can just
why can't you gauge that away in five dimensions? Why can't you choose a coordinate system where you remove that one particular mode?
Because of the brain, because you
the
have
brain, it's a, it's
yeah,
the brains.
The brains are the ones that don't allow you to.
Okay.
And that's precisely the mode. I mean, so the vibration of the brain. So okay. With no brains, you could gauge it away. Okay. And so okay, so the couplings will involve somewhat the energy momentum tensor. So one can find what is the coupling of the radian with matter in the bulk, and with a 4D notation, it depends on this way, with this between the trace of a somewhat energy momentum tensor, 4D energy momentum tensor, and the five-part component. Okay, so now the radian is not canonically normalized. It's R is just what is appears in the metric. When you go ahead and canonically normalize the kinetic terms for this guy, this is what I call the physical radian, and you pull out a scale lambda r, which is going to be a very important, it's going to be our parameter to follow, I mean, our parameter for the model. And this lambda r is the Planck mass worked down. So this is TED scale. So the radian comes with a TED scale, with 1 over lambda, where lambda is TED. And that's what's going to be defining the couplings. Because here you have phi over lambda. And so the couplings of the radian are going to be suppressed by TED. Okay, so when matter is on the brain, so this is RS1, there's no fields in the bulk, all the matter is in the bulk, so the coupling of the radian is just couples to the trace of the energy momentum tensor with this suppression, which is warped down Planck mass. So this is TED scale. Now it turns out that these couplings are built, so the radian basically couples to mass, just like the Higgs. And so you can write down the couplings of radian to gluons, photons, massive four bosons, and fermions in this way. And if you stare long enough, you see that these are actually exactly the same couplings as the Higgs. If you were to change this lambda r by the Higgs path, so all the couplings are exactly the same except for massless fields. But heavy fields, it's just same. Couples proportional to the mass, but with a suppression of lambda.
So these Fs are like loop and triangle loops.
Yeah. So for gluons and photons, you have the typical radiative coupling through a top or the Ws for photons, and this is this F. But you have an extra term coming from the trace anomaly because the radian couples to the energy momentum tensor. Now this is important because this is the beta coefficient, the beta function coefficient of SU3 for the gluon. This term is actually 7, and numerically this thing here is order 1. So the coupling of the radian to gluons is actually pretty strong because you get a suppression. It's actually very close to the coupling of the Higgs to gluons, because in the Higgs, so you get a suppression of say 1/10 because you have. Instead of V, you have lambda, but then you get an enhancement, maybe roughly, well, something like 10. So you're going to produce roughly the same amount of radians as Higgs's at the LHC.
Because of the V.
Because of the Vs. Because numerically, this whole thing, instead of being order 1, it's order 9. So when you work out, I mean, this is 1/10 of V, I mean, 10 times V, and this is 10 times, so thing cancels. So you expect to produce lots of radians. On the other hand, the coupling of two vector bosons is 10 times suppressed. So you will not produce the radian in vector boson fusion, as opposed to the Higgs case, where you can still produce the Higgs with two vector boson fusion coming from two parts. For the radian case, this coupling is 10 times smaller, so you will produce 100 times less.
You said this, so the tau is in ratios of masses?
This is ratios of masses.
So this is just a triangle graph you're about.
Yes. So this is radial mass over top mass. Well, you can use also the bottom. This is top over radial mass. It's I mean, these are the formulas for the Higgs.
Right.
And here you have W. So.
Do KK modes decay into radium? Or like, is it any?
Yeah, they should. I think they should.
But it's not probably not seen it.
Well, I mean, is it interesting? I mean,
yeah, probably not. Right.
And maybe, you know, if you have one KK mode, say one KK graviton, you can try to look at its decay into radians. If you only have that available, but
yeah.
I mean, that's just very.
Okay.
So can you have a phi F bar F coupling directly, or in the previous response, you had phi M over lambda F bar F, the bottom coupling there. Can you have a phi F bar F coupling directly, or is that not allowed?
So this coupling?
Yeah.
So that's what you have. So you get this coupling, it's just that it's...
So if MF is zero, there's no coupling.
Yeah.
You can't have phi going directly to FRF even
if
MF is zero.
If it's a massless fermion, no, you can't. At least not three level. So if there is some induced by loops, it's going to be really, really small. Okay, so branchings, this is all plot, and let's just look at the LHCs. This is gluon fusion production for the radion, and this is WW and ZZ fusion. And the point is what I was just saying, that you're just going to produce the radion on gluon fusion. WW fusion is almost three orders of magnitude, two and a half orders of magnitude smaller in production. And that's unlike the Higgs, where it's roughly just, I mean, one-tenth of the Higgs produced should be... could be coming from WW fusion. The radium just comes from gluon fusion. Okay, so this over the summer there was this nice results from Tevatron, where they were excluding a Higgs, a standard model Higgs of 175 GeV. So I was talking with a visitor in Maryland, and we decided to kind of put flows on the current bounds on this radium in RS1. So left bounds, so of course, all bounds from LEP are, you can just relate the bounds on the Higgs given by LEP on the radium, because the couplings are, I mean, we share the same type of couplings. And so the bounds from LEP are not very strong. For very light radium, it goes for, you know, 1.5 TeV, and as the radium becomes heavier, the bounds from LEP disappear. There's also bounds from CDF looking into Kaluza-Klein gravitons into gamma-gamma. This is a completely indirect bound, but so because the Kaluza-Klein gravitons interact with matter via a Planck, a warped-down Planck interaction, which is actually the same as, well, square root of 2 times this coupling. If you're putting bounds on the coupling strength of KK gravitons, you're also indirectly putting bounds on this lambda for the radium. And so depending, so this K here is the ADS5 curvature, and depending on the value for this K over M Planck, you can put bounds on what lambda phi should be, based on KK gravity. So this is kind of an indirect bound. So if this thing is very small, you see that the bound is quite strong. All this would be excluded. But if K over M Planck is order 1 or 0.5, well, the bound is 1.5. So now Tevatron announced this result for the Higgs, and it turned out it's very easy to translate their bounds on Higgs physics into radion, because most of the Higgses that they're looking for are producing blue. So they're looking for PP bar to Higgs to WW. And that would be exactly the same thing that the radion would do, especially in this mass range. So you just convert their limits on Higgs into radion, and that's kind of, I took actually D0 data, where they have a very nice table that one can use. CDF did a joint analysis for all their channels possible, including all the information they could, and extracting information from there in a nice way was harder. But if one were to actually join both CDF and D0, this kind of the bound one you get.
So isn't this nice? Is the branching to W smaller though?
Radiant to WW?
Well, let's say for the Higgs. Because it's lambda.
No, but it's the same. I mean, once you've produced it, it will decay. It will decay in the most massive particle. It can decay kinematically.
Yeah, yeah.
And so the branching is almost the same.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe there's a little bit difference because, okay, we'll have a, what? glue branching is slightly higher for the radian, but it's really tiny. I mean, really, once you can gain two W's and Z's, it's exactly like the Higgs, because these are very, very particles that this takes over. Okay, so these are the kind of current bounds. Okay, so now radian matter in the box. So this is this paper that came about 2 years ago. So now the difference, especially for the first difference, is that
so the bounds you just quoted were for matter in the brain.
Yes, sorry. Yes, for RS1. So okay. this is RS1, especially because in RS, if you put matter in the bulk, then the coupling of KK gravitons to most of the matter, I mean, they couple very weakly, because you're pushing most of the fields, electrons, and they are on the Planck brain, whereas KK gravitons are on the TV brain. So the couplings of the KK gravitons, which I'm using here, are really messed up. So yeah, this is RS for RS1. So for massless fields, you still have loop contribution, beta, I mean, trace anomaly contribution, but now remember that I have this T55 term, so you have a three-level coupling, even to photons from this radio. And this is this term. And these authors, they still have the possibility of having brain kinetic terms for the gauge fields, and those would enter in from this term. And so now you have this extra term for massless gauge fields. It's not actually very important for the gluon, so the radian to gluon coupling is roughly similar. But for the photon coupling, actually, this term is so large that it flips the sign, the overall sign of the coupling. And unfortunately, the overall size of the coupling is roughly the same size as it was before, but with a flipped sign. But anyway, it's important. I mean, you have this extra contribution.
What's tau UV and tau IR?
So these are contributions from brain kinetic terms. So you can put brain kinetic terms on the IR brain and on the UV brain, and those will also contribute to the coupling. I mean, for the analyzer, I set them to zero, but I mean, this can play.
So in other terms, for the gluon, you mean?
For whatever, for your field. Gluon or for, yeah, so.
Whatever the F is.
Yeah, so this here is whatever case, gluon. And interaction to massive bosons, these bosons are roughly the same. They're still dominated by the mass, so they still, they're very strong because it's the mass, and they're slightly suppressed, but roughly the same. For fermions, again, the radian will couple again to the fermions. I will come back to that later when I talk about flavor and the radian, but more or less, the coupling is proportional to the mass of the fermions. And then the Higgs is the same as in RS1 because I'm still considering the Higgs on the brain. So this is a plot of branchings. So thick lines are the model with bulk fields, and these dotted lines are the old RS1. And if you've seen branchings for the Higgs, they're very, very similar. So you see that below the ZZ and W threshold, when the radian or the Higgs or the radian can decay into Z or Ws, the heaviest guy they can decay into is V quarks. So you have the VB quark VPS is dominating. The blue branching is a lot higher than in the Higgs case, because as I said, the radian will couple more importantly to gluons. So you have a strong branching into gluons, bosons, and then you have gamma-gamma, which is again of the same order as the Higgs. As the Higgs into gamma-gamma, which is 10 to the minus 3. Then W's and Z's come over and start dominating, and the story here is basically the same as the Higgs. A neat thing they observe is that now the gamma-gamma, instead of going down as the radian goes up in mass, you would expect the coupling to gamma-gamma to become smaller and smaller because the loop contribution becomes smaller. But in this case, it flattens because you have this bulk contribution, this three-level coupling of the radian to photon, which flattens the branching. It's still very small branching, but it does not go down as fast as it used to.
Can you go back just one slide? And
yes.
Just want to see what we can...
Which?
So this is the one,
yes.
The one over four.
Yes.
Why do you get that? Just because it's in the ball?
Yeah, just because you have five terms from the gauge field.
Do you follow that? I mean, when you do this kind of analysis, do you include things like radion Higgs mixing terms, and where you have to kind of diagonalize the physics?
And that's the, I'm going to do
that's
that. Yes, actually, that's the reason why I am pointing out this thing is because of that. Because with Higgs radion mixing, actually, you can actually get a heat pump. I mean, you can change things, and well, that's my observation, and that's what it
did. Did Chava and those guys, did they put mixing in?
No, they didn't. So I observed, I mean, I had done my PhD thesis on Higgs radio mixing, so I knew very well that because of this sign change, I said that the overall it's the same number, but it's flipped sign. And when you add Higgs radio mixing, that's very important.
Right.
And so that's...
how did you mix? They have different quantum numbers, so you need
to well, the physical fields have same quantum numbers. I mean, they're just two scalars which are uncharged and real, and so they could mix. Now, how you hook up the mixing, it depends on the model. But you just have two real scalar fields floating around.
I don't understand. The Higgs has got a charge.
Well, once you break electroweak symmetry breaking...
Charge is still there.
Well, the...
What's
a charge...
I mean, you can't. The symmetry is still there. It's just non-linear realized. So how can you? The Higgs field still has a hypercharge.
Oh,
it's some combination of the Higgs with something else and mixes with the radio.
So once you break.
You don't need the gauge singlet in order to mix with the radio. It has to be the SU2 cross U1 gauge singlet.
I mean, you can understand. You can look at some effective operator before breaking that have to be gauge invariant. But once you break the gauge invariants and you put beds all over the place, you can get some mixing.
Higgs, the boson, not Higgs, the double.
Yeah. So when I say Higgs, I mean just the physical Higgs, just the whatever comes out of after.
Okay.
So there's ways to hook up this mixing and. Okay. So sorry. Bounds. Now these are the bounds. I'm comparing now the Tevatron data that was published this summer between RS1 and Bob fields, and they're roughly similar. It turns out that. Because the gluon coupling is slightly enhanced, you get stringent bounds, more stringent bounds from if the bulk fields are in the model. And they're roughly simple. So you can go up for 100 sets. So for the best case, where they exclude the Higgs, in this for the radion case, you can actually exclude up to 3 dB. And I mean that's good. I mean it's better than nothing. And so this is Tevatron data with 3 inverse temporal. So what about LHC? So now I plot again radian mass versus lambda phi, but now in a larger scale because it's LHC. These are the Tevatron bounds, and so this is what I'm plotting here is the discovery reach. So this is a contour of signal significance of phi, so 5 sigma discovery level for the radian. So I just took the CMS Higgs search and I converted it into radian because again. The analysis is almost the same, so I carefully converted it, and then you see that in the radial decays into ZZ, which is a very clean channel, you can, with 30 inverse Fremco bound, 3 years, well, whatever years of LHC, you can be sure to see the radian up to 5 TeV for this lambda. Now, below, for lighter radian, you start to lose the W and ZZ channels, and then you rely on more on gamma-gamma. So for the Higgs, search, you have the help of W boson fusion, where you can actually produce the Higgs through W boson fusion, and you have jets backward and forward that you can tag. In the radian case, forget about it. You will not get that. So you're stuck with just looking at blue blue to radian to gamma gamma W. And so I just took whatever they have done. They, for example, CMS do not look at the gamma-gamma channel below 110 because the Higgs should not be there. But anyway, it would be interesting in seeing what these bounds, I mean, what they can do for lighter scalar field, Higgs-like scalar field. But so, of course, lighter radian is going to be very hard to see. In this region, it's just, I mean, it will only decay to BD bar, and that's it. And so you probably won't see it.
Prefer to get up. Why does it have the funny shape that it's easy?
Well, I'm not sure. I mean, that's. Yeah, I'm not sure why it's this funny shape. I mean, of course, I'm taking into account. So as the Higgs becomes heavier, its width becomes larger. maybe it's something like that. I don't know what's that, but anyway, so I took into account the fact that the Higgs, heavier Higgs around here, has a very, very big width, and therefore, one has to take into account that in their search, they're adding lots of background. In the radian case, the width is always 100 times smaller, I mean, roughly speaking. So it's always going to be an arrow. So as you move up in mass, the radian gets better and better because you're still only looking at the invariant masses of the resolution of the experiment. You don't need to integrate over large width. So maybe that's why, well, I'm not sure. I'm not sure why it's that, but. So you know, as you move up in mass, the conversion is slightly different. So that may enhance this effect, because in the Higgs, so this thing is actually probably in the Higgs also, but it's very smooth. I don't know why it appeared here on the radian. But so how you did the conversion? You basically had to be careful with the widths, mm-hmm. to make sure that you're integrating only on the roughly experimental resolution. The Higgs gets fatter and fatter. For the Higgs case, it's worse. So the discovery reaches is worse, gets worse. But anyway,
how much does the width increase as you increase the radian?
Well, for the radian, I think even for up to 1 keV, I don't think it reaches more than that 5 GeV or something like that. Whereas the Higgs, it very soon it reaches, I don't know, 70 GeV for, I don't know, 600 GeV or something. I mean, for the Higgs, it's very quickly very large. The radian is always going to always.
Why? Why? It's the basic reason. The difference.
Well, because the couplings of the couplings of the radian are 1/λ, and the couplings of the Higgs are 1/V. So there's a 1/10. So when you square it, it's a 100. So you really expect to be always 100 times. Okay, so Higgs radian mixing, how you cook it up. So this was proposed first by these people, so in this RS1 model, actually, if the Higgs is on the bulk, there's Higgs radian mixing by default. But if in RS1 everybody is on the brain, so you can actually put a Ricci scalar coupled to H dagger H, where this is the ASU2 invariant Higgs. And then out of this, you extract the radian. I mean, you have the metric, and so you extract radian out of here and physical Higgs out of here, and what you get is a kinetic mixing between the Higgs and the radian. So this is a very neat way of introducing the mixing. So you have kinetic mixing, so you need to undo the kinetic mixing, which will give you kinetic terms for both Higgs and radian, which are not canonical. So you canonically normalize these kinetic terms. And then you undo the mixing in the mass, because after undoing the kinetic mixing, you introduce a mixing in the mass. So all this to say that the way of diagonalizing this term is not a unitary rotation. It's not unitary. You need to redefine fields and then rotate. So it's not a simple sine and cosine, but.
So little v here is under the Higgs? Little v?
Yes.
Oh,
that's okay. Fixed there. So you have this, and this parameter C is the parameter governing how much mixing you have, because it's linear in the kinetic mixing. So for zero, there's nothing, it can be positive or negative, and you can get some mixing. So that's how it was originally cooked.
And V and V0 are the same? Or
I have a V0? Oh, yes, sorry. Yes, that's the same. It's just the same. It's, because this term also introduces actually an extra kinetic term for the radian.
So the Higgs radian coupling is actually SU2 invariant. It's Cage invariant.
Yeah, so this is Cage invariant, yeah. Yes. Yeah. Except that once you break it, you obtain some.
No, but even with breaking, that VH0 is a gauge singlet. It's SU2 invariant.
H0?
The VH0, when you put the Higgs in front of the H0, you can construct an SU2 invariant. That's an SU2 invariant coupling.
Okay.
You can't break a gauge symmetry.
Well, okay.
It's always possible to write things in an explicitly gauge invariant way, even when the symmetry is non-linear realized.
Okay. But in any case, I started off with a gauge invariant.
Sure.
So I guess that's not surprising that. So anyway, this is how you cook it up, this mixing. So now you're
you're playing the radio mesh pattern.
Yes, yes.
Somehow, but you, in the RS model, you need some additional bulk scale.
Yes.
Yes,
that's true. So the assumption is that this Goldberger-Weiss field will not backreact much into the metric, and therefore will not mess up with the with the gravity scalar.
There's a significant mixing between the radio and the bulk scalar.
Yes. Yes, but then you would expect, okay, that's true. I mean, you have to be careful, but then that would mean there's a large back reaction on the metric. So maybe your metric solution is not anymore Randall syndrome or ABS 5 metric. So that would be, I would put it into a large back reaction section of models. So if you don't want large back reactions, if you put a scalar field in the bulk, and you will still want to find a solution which looks very much like ADS5, that's small back reaction. So in that case, you're still going to have a very light, I mean, the radian is going to be almost massless, and it's going to be mostly the gravity scale, not the Goldberger-Weiss field. You can start pumping it up and then mix very heavily whatever the lighter scalar field from the Goldberger-Weiss mix sector with the radian, and yes, then it becomes more messy. But so at least if you really want very small back reaction, then you're safe. You can still go ahead.
Surprised by that. My intuition is that the back reaction is controlled by the value of the potential, whereas the mixing is controlled by how similar the masses are. And somehow if you're designing the potential to make to stabilize things, you know, so that the closest Planck scale is the least scale once it goes down, I'm surprised that the mass you get from the potential is so different from the mass of the closest Planck states. Is that what you're saying?
Well, my intuition is that if you really want to maintain a ADS5 metric,
yeah.
That metric will always have, I mean, will be always kind of scale invariant, and will have a massless radian. I mean, it will not, the work factor is basically a straight line, and it will not fix you the size of the stock dimension, therefore a massless radian.
Yeah.
So as long as you're not changing much from that picture, the radian should be, I mean, you should have a very light gravity scalar.
But then you probably have to also stabilize the dimensions very much, right? So if you're given that you've stabilized the dimensions, it seems like this is the one potential where you have a lower limit of how strongly you can couple it.
Yeah, that's...
It's true that the flap direction you're stabilizing is very light compared to everybody else, so you don't, you know, you can do it with a... But I haven't really modeled the Goldberger-Weiss model well enough to know that there's probably a parameter you can... Is there a parameter you can dial that controls the radian mass compared to the spine scale?
Well, yeah, most probably, but it's not. I mean, the radian mass is not exactly. I mean, there's not a very easy way of looking at how the mass goes. But yeah, there must be a parameter, but that parameter will also induce a large change in your background metric.
That's the thing. I don't quite see the connection yet, because it's the. I'm thinking the size of the correction to the background metric is controlled by the value of the energy density, which is like the value of potential rather than its curvature. Because the curvature is what's measuring the mass. It's true that you're related somehow because you're coupling to the metric when you're mixing with this radian. So has someone looked at it, or is it something which people kind of say, well, it shouldn't be a problem, so we won't look at it?
Yeah, more or less like it. But I mean, at least to me, you know, intuitively, it seems fine. But yeah, it's I don't think it's been looked at
very carefully.
And then it becomes very messy. I mean, if you're looking at Higgs radio mixing with a Goldberger-Weiss field, then you have three scalar fields around, and so it becomes very messy. You want to do it properly. But so hey, so we'll assume that there's a more small back reaction, and that the Goldberger-Weiss field does not mix much. But the lightest excitations are still Higgs and radio. These lighter guys here are still mostly gravity scalar and Higgs. So
how does the radio mass look like in the Goldberger-Weiss field?
How does it?
How does radio mass depend on the work factor? Or is it just a free parameter?
I'm treating it as a free parameter. I mean, because it really depends on what model or what potential you're putting there. And I'm pretty sure you can find any mass you want for any model.
Like in the, yeah, there's a lot of parameters in the
Yeah, so it's actually, it's a good question. I mean, it would be really interesting to have a pretty simple estimate of what the map is, but I don't have it. I don't know. I think it's been done, like, you know, rule of thumb. So I would treat the mass of the radian as a free parameter.
Can you have a direct X radian coupling without derivatives?
Not in this case. If the Higgs is in the bulk, you can. But not for the brain case scenario. So it turns out that if the Higgs is a 5D field, then you can generate directly couplings, mixing between radian and Higgs. And that's, I don't think that's been done, but it's kind of common knowledge. But anyway, how you get the mixing, I mean, at least phenomenologically important is that they can mix.
Is it Xi is order one? Xi is order one?
Well, yes, it's order one. Actually, in this case, it's bound, as I would show. Okay, so the mixing, as I said, it's not a cosine, sine, it's not a unitary rotation, but it involves some rotation and some non-unitary terms. But so I will call B as like the cosine of the rotation, this is like the sine, and this is almost also like another cosine, another sine. So now we have four parameters, the physical masses of radian and Higgs, so these are the physical, the things that you would measure. We have the scale lambda and the mixing parameter C. These are the four parameters that I will consider now. So it turns out that in this specific kind of mixing, even if I fix two of the parameters, fix to 120 and lambda to 5 dB, the two other parameters are actually kind of constrained. So you see that the C mixing parameter cannot be too large. Particularly if it's above 3 and minus 3, three and a half roughly, what you get is a flip in the sign of the kinetic term, so you get a ghost. So in this region, your original Lagrangian before mixing had ghosts, had one scalar with a negative kinetic term. In this region here, what you have, I mean, this is for the physical masses, but so what I'm saying is that if now you undo the mixing and look at what was the original Lagrangian, in this case here you would have complex masses. So it's like you would have started with a Lagrangian with complex masses. So these masses here, mass squared, would be complex masses, and that kind of, that just doesn't make sense for a real scalar field with a complex number level. So these are the excluded, theoretically excluded region. And in this region is where if you undo the mixing, you find the theoretically safe Lagrangian. This business is because basically this kinetic mixing was not just a unitary rotation. It had these weird redefinitions of fields and kinetic terms being redefined, things like that. So anyway, so you have two regions, and you observe that you cannot have degeneracy. I mean, you cannot have mixing and degeneracy between the physical fields, radian and Higgs. So
I don't really understand that. Why not? You're saying theoretically, I couldn't have designed a model where I have degenerate mass for any value.
Well, so you could not design the model, so you could not start from a normal Lagrangian like this, so from say real masses, and some C, you will never find a solution where the physical eigenstates will be degenerate.
Let's say I took C because your conclusion was for arbitrary C.
Yep.
So if I make C zero, then it looks like I can just take.
Yeah. So that's the only way you can do it is for C equal to zero.
Was that on your plot? That didn't.
Well,
that's where the thing touched.
Yeah. So that's. So for no mixing, you can do it. But as soon as there's a infinitesimal mixing, it goes wrong.
That's weird. So you're saying I can't mix particles of the Hadoop masses close to one another?
Well, yeah, you will not find with that kind of kinetic mixing, you will not find two degenerate masses.
Does that mean that wasn't the general enough kinetic, the thing you charged from wasn't general enough?
Yeah, so unless you allow this parameter to be complex, that's what I'm saying. So if you allow this...
Yeah, I don't want to do that.
So if you allow these parameters to be complex, then you can do it.
You may have brain-induced typing that may contribute to the radio kick.
But he's got a kinetic converter.
So there's a kinetic term here and there's a kinetic mixing.
Right, but I guess you canonically, you don't have an H naught box H. But I guess you could always canonically normalize H for free or something.
Yeah.
So that's the most general redundancy you can refer.
Well, that's fine. That's what you write down out of this.
I guess if you're thinking of just the 40 fields, like what's the most general quadratic redundancy you can refer to.
Oh, I see. You've got your coefficients are related to one another, you're saying?
Yes.
So you've got two parameters, C and V naught over V over lambda, and the two masses. And you could have had two masses, an off-diagonal term, and then the terms all around. So is it?
I think this non-minimal coupling is a higher operator than the brain-induced Einstein.
If you add
the brain-induced Einstein, and then you could change the radio kinetic term.
Sure, but
what?
Changing the radio kinetic term...
This is the most general Lagrangian you've heard,
isn't it?
Well,
it's always like free parameter. I mean, it's like every term has a free parameter.
But they're independent, because I could have had three kinetic terms, which I guess you could always scale two of them to kind of value. So I have one kinetic term parameter, and then I should have had three mass parameters. That's four parameters. Just hanging those four parameters there. Cool. Yeah, you're right.
So it just happens that for some values of those parameters, you get both more complex. You get that complex.
Yes.
But doesn't that sound weird? So you're saying that they absolutely...
It's weird because it's not an orthogonal approach. I mean, it's not a...
But supposing I started with the masses the same, and I went backwards.
And you get some constraints on the
profile. Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. So you start here, that's what I'm showing in the plot. You start with everything is nice masses, and I pick a point here, and I go backwards, I will find one of these masses, one of the original masses is complex.
But that just seems bizarre to me that I can't. Nothing went into that at all because it was completely general mixing. You're saying that I can't freely choose my mixings and my masses just on principle, not it's somehow inconsistent just from Lorentz invariance. So. Right, and unitarity.
And this result is pretty robust.
Something to do with the positivity.
I always assumed that this was the business of non-unitarity. Redefine fields by stress one. And So I mean that's really the origin of this. I'm not sure if there's any deep. So anyway, so for a fixed mixing, what I'm telling you is that for fixed mixing and fixed mass, there's a forbidden path. Mass. So if I fix the mixing to be minus one, the mass to be 120, the region cannot have that mass. It has to be either lighter or heavier. Okay, what time did I start?
Yeah.
You can go to another half hour.
We don't get kicked out until 2:30.
Okay, so I'm interested in a small amount of mixing. So for a small amount of mixing, however you hook up the mixing doesn't really matter. Even if it's not unitary, who cares? Okay, so because I'm interested in looking at the radiant physics. So these are the bare couplings, so G0H and G0 phi are the bare couplings of the Higgs and radiant. And so the physical couplings will depend on the mixing angles. This guy is DBCA, so this is this was like a cosine, and I'm saying I want a small mixing angle, so this is close to one. This is smaller, a small inheritance of the radian couplings. So for the physical, for what I'm going to call the radian, which is this kind of almost grand-scalar field, you have the old coupling of the radian and a little bit of the heat coupling. Now the couplings of the radian, the original couplings of the radian are actually related to the fixed coupling that I said. They're the same except when they're suppressed by lambda. So they're roughly GH times G over lambda. And I'm saying I want a little bit of mixing, so these cosines of rotations are roughly one and these are small numbers. So what happens to the fixed coupling? So the fixed coupling, I rewrite it, so it's basically the bare coupling, and that's one plus a small parameter times a small parameter. So the fixed couplings are roughly just fixed. What about the radian? It turns out that the radian couplings are, you can extract the Higgs coupling, so they depend on the Higgs coupling, but then now you have a small parameter C, which comes from inheriting a little bit of the Higgs couplings, and then you have this small parameter, which is the G over lambda. So the point is that for small mixing, the couplings of the radian can actually change a lot, especially if these two contributes and kill each other. So you can get, for a small amount of mixing, you can get phobic couplings of the radian. You can actually completely kill the couplings to minus five. So that was the point. So this is some old clause. So if the mixing is Higgs couplings normalized to the standard model of Higgs couplings, and if the heat radian coupling is small, at the time we were looking at large coupling, but if it's small, you see that the Higgs roughly remains, the coupling of the Higgs roughly remain close to one normalized. For the radian case, well, for different values, this is the radian coupling not compared to the standard model of Higgs coupling, which I said. You see that there are some values at which the coupling of the radian changes dramatically. So, and this is the point I was making just ago. There's a point in parameter space in which you can actually suppress completely the couplings of the radian. For 200 GV radian is here, for 555 GV is here, and actually, for a very light radian, you actually need more coupling. But anyway, that's an important point. So now let's compare Randall syndrome 1 and Paul fields, the branchings. So here I'm fixing a small amount of mixing. So C is minus 0.1. Here is the forbidden band I was talking about earlier. So the radian, the physical radian, cannot have a mass degenerate with the Higgs, and the Higgs is 150. So around 150, you're forbidden. And it turns out that the parameter point in which the couplings of the radian cancel is around here. And it turns out that everything cancels, both gamma-gamma, ZZ couplings, Fermi couplings, they all happen to cancel in the same spot. That's just, except for the gluon. Because the gluon couplings are completely different from the rest of the fields. It has also a zero, but it's actually here, at least for the region. What happens when you add bulk in the fields? As I said, the couplings to fermions actually flip sign. And that's kind of crucial, because now the zero, the point, so for this mixing in parameter region, there's a point where the coupling of or radian to photon has a suppression, and it's here. But it's completely separated with the point where the coupling to fermions and W's and Z vanish, which is here. Which means that the branching fraction, the branching decay into gamma-gamma is extremely enhanced, quite firm. That can go to 1%. Okay, and so that's very good, because it means you will see this radian to gamma-gamma a lot easier if you happen to live in that spot. So now if you add a positive C-mixing but small, and we look at all the Randall syndrome, roughly the zero of everybody happens in this region, and so everybody is suppressed. And again, in both fields, the zero for massive particles and fermions happen around this region, whereas now the gamma gamma zero is switched to the other side of this forbidden region. So now you can have a heavy radian, a very heavy scalar, with a very large branching into gamma gamma, which this is Higgs will not do that, and not be, and radio in RS1 will also won't do that. So this is a very interesting thing. I mean, you could start, you could see a bump in gamma-gamma, and let's see at 300 GV. So you might as well look at that, and not stopping at 150 GV. Or so that's false. So how
far? So all this time on the Higgs branches don't change because you said this.
Yeah, I'm considering small. Yeah, so generically people say, yeah, let's forget about Higgs radio mixing because in any case the mixing should be small if it's generated by loops or whatever. But if you're looking at radion physics, precisely small mixing is very important because it can have an important consequence on the radion. In the Higgs, with the phenomenon of the Higgs, in the small mixing region is the same. You just have a Higgs, whatever mass it is. Okay, so now in the parameter space, so I fix these two parameters, mass of the physical Higgs and lambda. I see how fine-tuned is this region where you get enhancement. So these are contours of RS. So RS is the ratio between the discovery significance for a radion and a standard model Higgs of same mass. So in other words, how much better can you do for a radion at LHC or at TEMAS, or at the Hadron Collider. So these are the contours. So one means you do the same for both Higgs and the radion. And so this is light radion. So this is this hourglass plot that I showed earlier, but I'm just zooming in this mass region. And it turns out that for C mixing, actually even large mixing, there's a region in which you can do a lot better. And so this is what you find. This is for bulk fields, in which negative C mixing can allow you to do a lot better than you would do for a Higgs of same mass. And in RS1, you couldn't do as much better. I mean, as I studied 5 years ago, we never saw a really big enhancement in the gamma, no matter where. These are regions that are excluded actually by left. What about the heavy radion case? So now that's the top part of this hourglass plot. And so now this is kind of a fine-tuned region. So there's a region in which the couplings to Ws and Zs and fermions are vanishing. And so that's this kind of tower here. And so here I'm plotting contours for RS1 and bulk fields, contours of the production cross-section of gamma-gamma. So PP to radion to gamma-gamma. In femtobarns. Now, a Higgs, so the best case for a Higgs at LHC, for a 130 GV Higgs, the cross section I'm finding with, so I'm not doing actually a QCD correction. So what I find in my code for a Higgs is roughly 40 femtobarns. I think it may be two times larger if you use QCD correction. But all this to say that you expect to have as many events of radions in this case, of this case, heavy radions, as you would for Higgs of 130 GeV. So this 40 is roughly the amount of Higgs to gamma you would expect at 130 GeV. So the best case scenario for Higgs to gamma. So this is a sure region. So you would see these guys for sure. Moreover, this is heavy guys. So the backgrounds of photons is smaller. It goes down. So maybe even this line could be seen. So I mean, it's a matter of carefully studying. I haven't done any study of this, but it's clear that you could see this effect. For a very heavy, I mean, you can even get to, I mean, of course, I'm tuning the region, if you happen to have very small mixing here, you can even have a 350 GV bump in gamma-gamma. Whereas in all RS, we couldn't get a big cross-section for this. As it turns out, these plots before the Tevatron data came out, turns out that for this 2TB parameter, they actually exclude this bunch. I could have gone to 2.5 TB, and then the exclusion from Tevatron is gone, but it's kind of cool to be excluded by experiments in the summer. So anyway. So the diphoton signal could be interesting if there is Higgs radio mixing. Okay, so what about flavor? So this is the last work. So I'll do everything quick. So okay, this slide is just to introduce. So we have fermions in the bulk, which means we're adding now vector like our fermions are not chiral. We have vector like fermions. We have a left-handed and a right-handed doublet, and then we also have to include the SU2 singlets, and we'll have a left-handed part and a right-handed part. By boundary conditions, you kind of mod out the guys you don't want, so that you kind of obtain a standard model-like spectrum. And so that's the deal. If you add, you're allowed to add a master with the bulk, and so that this C number is in units of the curvature. So the amount of, so the how large is this mass will determine where your fermions, where the zero mode profiles are localized. So this number here will tell me if the fermions have an exponential localization towards the Planck brain or towards the DB brain. This is the zero mode, so these are the Neumann boundary conditions, and so these are the guys that survive, so that you can build your standard model, the left-handed doublet and left-handed singlet. They have some dependence, so this is in the conformal basis, but in the Randolph domain, these are exponential, and they can be exponentially localized on one side or the other. So the Kawa couplings, so the masses of the fermions in these models are generated. I mean, if you the Higgs lives on the TV brain, they will depend on this, what in the literature people call F numbers, which are the wave functions of the fermions evaluated at the TV brain, and this involve work factors. So R here is Planck length, and R prime is a TV length. So this R over R prime is a very, very, very small number. It's 10 to the minus 15 or something like that. Okay, so these Fs for appropriate C number, the wave functions of the TV variant can be exponentially small. For both the Q guy and the left-handed guy and the right-handed guy. So what you end up having, and this is really a twiddle, is a hierarchical mass matrix. You have the 1-1 entry on the mass matrix will involve a very exponentially suppressed factor and another exponentially suppressed factor. And then the 2-2 entry, slightly less, and the top quark entry, or the 3-3 entry, will be roughly 1. And then it goes hierarchically in this direction. So that means that to diagonalize this mass, you will have the left-handed rotation matrix, which look very much like C-gain matrix, where lambda here is the Kabibbo angle, and the right-handed metric should be almost diagonal, but the entry should roughly be given by the ratio of masses if you want to generate the masses. So that's what people call anarchy, flavor anarchy models in warped cell dimensions. Okay, so why?
What are the assumptions? How much of this is assumption, how much of it is derived?
So the assumption is, These parameters are the masses of the fields in 5D. If they're roughly around, so if this C number is larger than 1/2, then this exponent here is negative, and then you have here a large work factor. So the assumption is that you don't have a large hierarchy on the C numbers. But even if you don't have a large hierarchy in the bulk masses, you obtain a large hierarchy in the 4D effective.
And is that generic, or is it some choice?
Well, the hierarchy is generic. Obtaining the correct phenomenology, I mean, you still need to choose correctly the C's so that you obtain the exact CKM matrix and the masses. But it is generic that if you have C's that are slightly different, in this case it's like 0.5, 0.6, 0.7, or well, you can think if you don't care about phenomenology, you say you have C's 1, 2, and 3, you will really generate hierarchies because you have an exponential factor. So a little change in the C's, even if they're all order 1, they will still generate a large hierarchical matrix. Of course, you need to choose them correctly, so you still need to choose them to get correct phenomenology, but generically, you know, you can generically say that a tiny hierarchy in C's will use a large hierarchy in class matrix. That's the model. But why do I care about that? It's because of, again, this paper. They found the coupling of the radion to fermions, and it turns out that it depends on these CT parameters. So it's proportional to the mass, but it has this dependence on the C parameters. This is actually order one. So in my notation, this is about 1/2 to obtain the correct terminology. This C is around 1/2, and this is around -1/2. So when they add together, it's around 1, but it's really 1.2, 1.3, it depends. So that's what they found. The calculation is quite involved because you need to go to this action, extract the radian out of here, extract what are the physical states, and then look at what is the coupling. And the coupling is very simple. It's almost what we would expect, except it's C2 minus U. Now, hand-wavy way of seeing why that is to kind of think what is the radian. So the radian is really a fluctuation of the TV brain. It's a fluctuation of the size. It's the five. You can think of the radian as the 5-5 component of the metric, which tells you how to measure distance along the extra dimension. So it's a fluctuation of the TV brain. So in the conformal basis, it's really a fluctuation of the 1/r of scale. So of the TV scale. So you can just write down what is the dependence on the fermion masses on the TV scale, and it goes as 1/r prime CQ minus CU. You say, okay, now I'm going to perturb this 1/r by including the radian, and then you include this radian perturbation. This is a hand-wavy way, but it turns out to be exactly as a result. So you perturb this, your 1/r term, and you look at what is the linear dependence on the radian for this perturbation, and you in fact find that you have this CQ minus CU times the same result, which is actually the fermion mass. So at the end of the day, you can convince yourself that you get the same result. The radian coupling goes as the mass times these both mass parameters. Simply because the fermion fields, since they're localized and their mass depends on how they are localized, their localization depends on this bulk mass of this C parameter. But so changing where they are is changing the radian, and so that's why the radian coupling has to be dependent on sequence. Anyway.
Another way to think about it is that it's coupling the trace of the stress tensor, so that's it's sampling a change in scale. So if I differentiated the mass with respect to R, I've been pulling down CQ.
Yes, that's you can actually do it. It's better. I was just doing it for the faster, but that's it works out in exactly it's exactly the same way, and so it works out. So what these authors left it that way. I mean, they didn't see this is really tiny. So if you want to change the BB bar coupling by from 1 to 1.2, who cares, or top quark. But so you add families, this really is shouting that there's going to be some flavor effects in the radian couplings. So that's what we had to do. We actually added a bulk Higgs, any bulk Higgs, so no, we didn't specify what kind of bulk Higgs, just any bulk Higgs and three families. And we actually found, after a very involved calculation, what one expects, which is basically that the coupling of the radian to fermion is actually given by, the IJ entry is given by CQI minus CBJ times the mass matrix, the non-diagonal mass matrix. I mean, it's kind of trivial, but it was kind of hard to get the result. And especially if you add the bulk Higgs, because if the Higgs is in the bulk, now there's some of the Higgs field includes a little bit of radian in it. There's a Higgs radian mixing when the Higgs is in the bulk. And if you don't take that into account, you don't get this formula. And so once you properly go to the scalar perturbations from the Einstein action, so you really need to include the radian and the Higgs coupling. And when you properly include them, then you end up finding what we were expecting, but it was kind of more involved than it looks like. Anyway, so this mass now is a mass matrix which is not diagonal. So you see that when you're going to diagonalize, so at each entry of the mass matrix, there's a little bit of change. So there's 1.1 instead of 1. So you're going to have roughly the same fermion mass matrix, but all the entries are slightly different. So this will induce a fermion misalignment between the radian coupling and the mass matrix. So you can go ahead and rotate and mix, go to the physical basis of the fermions, and it turns out that you can actually estimate what are the entries of the octagonal entries of these mixes. For example, for DS5, so left, right, down, left, strange, right, 5, one can estimate actually the entry to be of this order. So of course, 1 over lambda, you extract MSMD, and this ADS depends on the difference between CQ1 and CQ2. I mean, it's really neat. And it depends in this way on the masses. This is because that's why I gave you this form, and you just plug these matrices in the coupling, you go ahead and undo the mixing from this matrix, and you kind of have a quick estimate. You know what's the estimate for the off-diagonal terms. And for SLDR, you actually find C, so you actually find the C dependence, but of the right hand side. So it turns out that it's the same order. It's small, it's super nice, but it is.
See, so the first paper just did say one generation.
Yes, so Chaba and company only did one generation, and they didn't even, I mean, they just said, oh, it's very small. There's nothing to do. Well, I mean, yes, they just didn't even think about flavor, but so it's still suppressed, but the point with the radian is that it can be light. So again, I go to the radian versus lambda claim, and as I said, the radian can be very light. So we did actually a scan, so we just generated order 1 Yukawa matrices and found points which work, and 70% of all the points lie in these two lines. So these are bound, so this is for roughly this misalignment of 0.03 and 0.012. I said that we were expecting half 0.06 somewhere here. So our scan, our NRT scan, agrees with the expectation, so we're right here. And so this is I'm just doing a three level four fermion operator that delta is equal to, so this is for epsilon k. So you just generate this operator by a three level exchange of radian. So it's very simple. So it depends on the radian mass and on the coupling lambda r, and of course on these entries that ADS and SAD.
You're picking Yukawas and C values that work.
Yeah, so I generate just first Yukawas, or all the entries are roughly order 1, okay, between.
And then you find the C's that give you the right masses.
Yes.
And then you calculate AS.
Yes. Like yeah, so you just look point. But you're pretty constrained. You're really, really constrained. You can prove that you're always going to be somewhere in that, because it's pretty constrained on what this. So whatever the CQ numbers you find, you will roughly get that amount. So you cannot suppress or enhance this out of. By playing around with Yukawas. A little bit, but so it's quite robust. And it's not very strong, the bounds. So for heavy radian, so these are the bounds, you have to be below, depending on the value of ADS, you have to be below. So for heavy radian, the bound is not very strong, but as you go lighter and lighter radian, of course, you're getting an enhancement because you have a lighter and lighter mass. And then you see that the bound can become really, really important for a very light region. Radian, which is actually the region where you cannot see it at AHC. But at least you're saying that it's in these models, it's kind of unlikely that you will have such a light radian if you believe in this flavor, because you then would have seen some CP violation or something like that. But you know, the bounding, I mean, it's interesting that the bound becomes polar. Of course, heavy radian, forget about it. Okay, and the last thing, just 1 second, is if the radian is heavy, we just looked at what about glue to radian into top chunk? You're also going to generate an off-diagonal radian to top chunk, so a flavor-changing neutral decay of the radian. Of course, it turns out that this ATC, this normalized coupling, is 0.1, which is very small. So we just wanted to estimate signal and background for this signal. So here we generate glue to radian and to TC. We decay the top quark into WB and the W leptonically. So this is what we're looking for. And the background, you have single top production, double digit, WBD. These are the backgrounds. So we generated all this with both PTI and CATCA, and kind of found that it's going to be very hard. It depends quadratically on this entry here. And our signal is 21 femtobarns times ATC squared. So it's pretty small. And the background is pretty large. So it's hard, except that you could now introduce some Higgs radio mixing. And the point of introducing a little bit of Higgs radio mixing is now the branching of the radium into TC can get enhanced if you kill the WW and ZZ branches. So that's the only point we kind of, there's some hope of maybe seeing this thing. If there's a little bit of Higgs radio mixing, you kill the WW branching. That's another radium, the branching into TC is enhanced, and therefore your signal is enhanced. And so I'm plotting here contours of signal to, of signal significance of 3, so 3 sigma, for 1 dB, 2 dB, and 4 dB. For this ATC parameter, which I'm expecting to be 0.1 or maybe even 0.2, but not more than that. And so you see that you can only do it if you are amazingly in this region where the branching ratios of the region are enhanced because the WW is suppressed. But so it's very hard, but well, okay. If you only find the Higgs and the radium, you might as well start looking into all these little effects because that's the only physics you will look at. Okay, so I conclude. Okay, so radium phenomenology is very, very similar to Higgs phenomenology. So when you look at the radium, it's basically just using Higgs data. Higgs radio mixing adds interesting new properties on the radio phenomenology, especially when these matter fields are in the bulk, and this was kind of unexpected. You have this gamma-gamma signal that now is a possibility for the radio, so you could still expect to see a bump in gamma-gamma for a scalar field and still think that you have a warp dimension. Okay, so what about FCNCs? Now, the region has generic FCNC couplings, and we've estimated them. They're small, but at least you can put bounds on the model parameters if the region is light. And maybe, although it's hard, you could try to look for region to top chance. Now, what we're doing now is it turns out that actually the Higgs itself in these models have actually flavor violating couplings too, so that's what we're working on right now with these two students. And so that's it. Thanks for inviting me.
Questions? Got a lot of questions in your talk.
Yes.
Yes. In the picture where the Higgs is confined to the brain and the standard model is in the bulk.
Yes.
Presumably that means W bosons are massless in the bulk. Was it?
No, they get a mass from the Higgs.
But there's no Higgs in the bulk.
The Higgs isn't, but the W's are on the bulk. They feel the coupling with the Higgs.
Oh yeah. I guess I don't understand the picture. No. I thought the Higgs only lived in the brain. There was no Higgs in bulk.
So you put an SU2 invariant gauge invariant Higgs on the brain. Yes. But
yeah,
it still has coupling.
So how can the W bosons in the bulk get a mass? If the Higgs isn't,
well, you still have kinetic terms for the Higgs in the brain, so it's still interacting with.
But there's no Higgs in the bulk.
No, it's just
the boundary. It's like a mass term on the brain for the W.
At the end of
on the brain, yes. But how does that get the W's in the bulk a mass?
Because the zero mode has a profile which is non-zero at the brain, but that whole mode gets a mass because it sees the boundary. Essentially, the longitudinal mode is localized on the brain.
Yeah.
Yes. Brain,
yes.
Yeah,
right.
Or
yes.
Yeah, so they don't all. I guess that puts fine ones on that side.
So somehow a bit of the Higgs on the brain is giving you the W in the bulk for mass.
But I think what you're saying is right. Like the bulk Higgs doesn't have a mass, but then at the zero mode level, when you look at it from the 40 point of view, then the zero mode has a mass because it has the longitudinal component.
Which is the Higgs,
which is the Higgs.
I have to think about that.
Yes,
okay.
It works out, but I mean, even if you so.
Yeah, but what you're saying is correct. I mean, you can think of a bulk Higgs not having a mass. The bulk W doesn't have a mass.
But if we live in the bulk, does that not have phenomenological consequences for us?
But it mixes with the boundary that goes to the boundary. So all we see in the world is
zero.
We're in the zero mode. We don't get to resolve, so all we see is the average over the whole extra dimensions. And so this the mixing of the zero mode with the brain mode.
Yeah, it's not obvious. Subtle, yeah. Yes, it works out. But yeah, I think it's just the longitudinal component of the W's and Z's are just from the kinks and brain and brain turn.
Questions? Yeah, I have a side question because I am not too well acquainted. But the same construction can work for the massive quark, the top quark, and the construction works in general.
For you the standard model, yes. Yes, yes, right. That's the point.
It contains all the matrix.
Yes, so that's the point, yes. And the top quark has to live actually on the right hand side. Because its mass is roughly like B, so it has to kind of be living in the deep brain. But yes, so that's it's kind of constraining because you want to reproduce all the mixing like masses, and that constrains your model.
And the question, the action for as a function of gravity, is the value has also like Higgs minimum or is zero value the.
So if you don't do anything, it's massless. It doesn't have a potential. Is that what you're asking?
Doesn't have a potential in quadratic.
Yes, it doesn't have a potential. So you need to put some stabilizing mechanism so that you give a potential to the radio. Yes. Although, yeah, I'm not. You assume that this is worked out and that the radio has some mass and. Actually, one of the reasons why we consider Higgs, I forgot to mention, why we consider Higgs in the bulk, because originally we thought that if the Higgs is in the bulk and the radion is also in the bulk, we thought that maybe there would be less misalignment, flavor misalignment. The Higgs being kind of parallel to the radion and going to the bulk, we thought that we would be getting less flavor misalignment, but we just get exactly the same as if the Higgs was in the brain. So that was.
And it's more pedagogical because I am not for the dynamics in the 50 dimensions and the brain. What is the action? Can you describe qualitatively the physical the nature of the action in the 50 dimensions of the interaction of the brain with the fish?
We just write a 5D action, just. Make standard model action into 5D roughly. I mean, I.
The action for the standard model, but the, for example, the brain, I have not a clear idea about physically what is it, a kind of stream, a kind of what kind of interaction.
It's kind of a boundary. I mean, to me, so you have just one extra an extra direction, and you have two boundaries.
Two boundaries. Uh-huh.
Yes. And then on the boundaries, you kind of do a 5D effective field theory. You can put stuff on the boundaries and things in the bulk. But from string theory picture, well, you know, maybe you can.
I wanted to get an idea.
Yeah. I don't know if people know in the string theory, thing, how to get these.
How to obtain, yeah, I think it's problematic. I mean, you know, it's.
And there is no clarity about how to obtain these pictures. No?
They're trying. I mean, I think I know Raman syndrome is trying and warp throats and things like that to try to generate this picture, but I think it's not easy.
Yeah. But that doesn't mean that it can't be done. I mean, they're
yeah, right. Yes. Yes.
In fact, that's, I think, a good reason. One of the motivations for this kind of thing is that if you find something interesting, they've got so many solutions to look amongst, it's useful for them to know what to look for, right? So if we've got a mechanism that does something interesting, like the Randall syndrome stuff in the first place, that they first said that you couldn't get that in string theory until then they flipped harder when they
yes,
saw
that's
it
true.
Nice to have
that's,
it, right?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Well,
thank you.
So an analogy here would be